All right. Thanks for joining us here on Raider Nation Radio. It's the morning tailgate here on this Monday. Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor, we're here in Las Vegas for you. You're up at 702-365-9200. You also want to keep that number handy so you can text the word pool, P-O-O-L, into that number, 702-365-9200. So you qualify for this week's Summer of Fun giveaway, a seven-night cruise, a Mexican cruise to Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, and Mazatlan. Do it right now. Text the word pool for your Summer of Fun and be the envy of everybody here on Raider Nation Radio. A lot to get into this hour. We'll do a little four-down territory. We also have tickets for the Summer League. Four tickets to go see any day's action over at the Thomas & Mack and Cox Pavilion. Be listening here on Raider Nation Radio. Vinny and Clay on your Monday. And Andy Phillips joins us now, the author of the top bestseller on Amazon, Round Zero, Inside the NFL Draft. He's also a writer with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, former Packers center, and he's here with us right now. Hey, Andy, thank you so much for being with us. This is the first time we've been able to talk in this offseason about Jared Goff and the Detroit Lions quarterback who got a new contract in this offseason. What did you think about Jared Goff's performance, not only in the last couple of years for the Lions, but somebody who is now deserving of that money because it looks as though that he has been overlooked for many years?
Yeah, listen, I am a huge fan of Jared Goff. Going back to his time with the Rams, I thought it was interesting, you know, being a Lions fan lifelong. When the trade happened, I understood it from both angles, and I liked both the quarterbacks involved in it, but the Lions needed a full-on reboot, a franchise reboot, and the only way to do that was to get rid of Stafford because of the haul you can get for him. And for the Rams, Sean McVay wanted to make sure he capitalized on that roster they had at the time with an older Andrew Whitworth, with Aaron Donald's future obviously coming near an end, and then his own self maybe having aspirations to get out of coaching early. So I understood from both sides, but I thought Jared Goff was a great quarterback that in a lot of other situations would have just stayed in Los Angeles with the Rams because he earned the right, in my opinion, to be a long-term franchise quarterback somewhere. And as a Lions fan, I'm happy it's in Detroit because there's a guy who's a former number one overall pick for a reason. 6'5", can make every throw on the field. I've watched a lot of Jared Goff, obviously, as we all have, but not many people in the NFL make that throw between, you know, 14 and 18 yards consistently more accurate than Goff does. The touch he can put on it, the power he can drive it with, being able to have the timing of it. You win a lot of football games in that part of the field because it's a little bit over the linebackers, but in front of the secondary. They're hard throws to layer in there, but he layers them very well. And there's a reason why a lot of people, when C.J. Stroud was coming into the draft, he had a lot of pro comps to Jared Goff. Everyone said he's kind of a Jared Goff that moves a little bit better. And I found Stroud, I said his tape reminded me more of Joe Burrow at LSU.
Okay.
But I understood what they meant because Stroud is the same when it comes to that middle of the field, that middle deep field area, being able to consistently layer the throws over the second level in between the third level. So I'm very happy with it. I think he's unheralded. I think he's super humble. He's a perfect leader for that city and that locker room. And he's a guy that, listen, the con on him that if you listen to national media is, well, if he doesn't have perfect protection, he's just, you know, he's just another guy. Okay, well, that's about everyone not named Pat Mahomes,
right,
or Lamar Jackson,
yes,
and Josh Allen. You're not always, if your con on the quarterback is when the offensive line's bad, well, shouldn't you just be upset at the offensive line?
Right.
Because your quarterback is, you know, it's a bonus when you can get the escapability to make some magic happen, but you're absolutely a franchise guy even if you can't do that. And the Lions offensive line, I'd argue, especially with Kelsey retiring, is the best in football. So it's a perfect marriage right now, I'd say, for the next 3-5 years.
Yeah, I was covering the Rams when they drafted Jared Goff, and it boggles my mind that people, you know, and I've talked to everyone that was part of that decision-making process to trade him. It felt like there was this perception that the Rams were just giving up on Jared Goff. They saw an opportunity to get better, but it wasn't like they were going to just trade him for anybody. It was freaking Matthew Stafford that they traded for. It's not like Matthew Stafford's become available every single day. Obviously, if you have a chance to get better, you're going to try to do that. But it wasn't like they were going to just trade him for anybody. So this notion that the Rams were just dumping him or getting rid of him and that they were moving on from him and that they would have done that regardless even if Stafford wasn't part of the deal is ludicrous to me. So why do you think there's this perception about that?
The perception, in my opinion, goes back to you know, people's first viewing of Jared Goff, which was his rookie year with Jeff Fisher. And there's a lot of people that are the casual fan that never watched him at Cal because when are Cal Berkeley games on? And a lot of people choose their opinion of somebody based on their first glimpse of them, and then they just write them off. And Jared Goff had a horrible Hard Knocks as a rookie and then a horrible rookie season. So a lot of people just wrote him off, and I think there was this perception of, well, the guy's no good. It's clearly all Sean McVay, which we all know is a load of crap because play call can be there. You got to make the plays and the timing and the rhythm. The game's way too hard to only be relying on the play caller, and that's what I tell everybody about Brock Purdy right now is, listen, I understand he wasn't a first-round pick, but I also understand that you can't just be reliant on the play call and lead the NFL in passer rating. Like, there's something there. And just the same thing with Jared. I think a lot of people just wrote him off and didn't decide to, you know, recheck in on him maybe. And I think because Stafford walked in and won a Super Bowl year one, that also contributed to maybe, see, told you Jared wasn't the guy type of stuff, but he's young. And listen, no one watched more Matthew Stafford than I did in my life. And it's amazing what that guy was able to do in those times in Detroit.
Yeah,
I mean, he came into the league, and his first couple of years, he was kind of, there was a joke that he was made of glass because he was hurt all the time. And now he's one of the most durable players, plays through so many injuries. But there was a stat when he was in Detroit that I ran. I think it was right around half of his career wins in Detroit, he had to lead a fourth quarter comeback. And that just shows you the power of Matthew Stafford of, dang, if I wasn't this good, I wouldn't even have half the wins I have in my Lions career. So there was something to that. But listen, I think Jared Goff's still a Los Angeles Ram today if Matthew Stafford never ran into Sean McVay in the offseason in Cabo.
Completely.
I mean, they said they ran into each other on vacation, and we all know how conversations can happen over a few drinks. And I think the wheel starts spinning. So kind of what you said, it wasn't like they were looking to, we got to get rid of this guy, kind of what the Chicago Bulls are trying to do with Zach LaVine right now and no one's taking. It's more of, dang, we have a chance to upgrade immediately, and we are this close to the Super Bowl. We got to take the chance. And I think over time, Sean McVay, once he's kind of out of the league, and once Jared and Matthew, once everyone's kind of out of the league where you're not really having to choose sides, I think he'll even come out and say nothing but great things about Jared Goff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, former author here and center, it's Andy Phillips here with us on the Morning Tailgate, APhil66 on X. So the Lions go 12-5 last year. They top the division of the NFC North. Of the other teams in that division, who do you think made the most upgrades in the offseason?
It could be the Bears, I think, with the most upgrades because they had a little bit more room at some key positions to make those upgrades. Mm-hmm. But their upgrade started at the trade deadline last year, getting Montez Sweat in there, who, funny enough, led both the Commanders and the Bears in sacks last year. Yep. You know, played half of both of them. So I think they started it then. But their defense was, I think, top five in the league last half of the season. So they already started improving that. Re-signing Jalen Johnson, arguably the best corner in football, was massive for them. Okay. Sometimes your best off seasons are keeping your own guys, and they did that with him. Then, obviously, bringing in Caleb Williams, who, no matter who we all had as our number one guy on our board and come the draft, was clearly a top five talent. So you upgrade that position immediately. And then you bring in Keenan Allen and Roma Dunze, who you guys know I thought was the best player in the entire draft. So I don't think anyone improved more than the Chicago Bears in that division. And it's the reason why I think, you know, a lot of sportsbooks have them as, you know, pretty good shot at making the playoffs. Because of the defense and the improvements they have at the offense. So I don't think anyone improved more than them, but, you know, Green Bay, again, part of improving isn't just adding new pieces. Sometimes it's your young players making strides with their experience in the season and then into the offseason. So we fully expect Green Bay should be better, too, getting that playoff experience last year and having that young core, the youngest team to make the playoffs since the 70s, the Oilers. Now you got the young core coming back, getting more experience. So you know they're going to be improved just from that aspect and the fact that they made some great additions in the secondary and free agency. So I expect both of those teams to compete for the division with Detroit. I don't think it's a walk in the park for the Lions. And you know, I told a lot of my Lions fans and family and friends last year that what's scary right now is I think Detroit has the infrastructure to be a good team in the NFL for a while now because they've done the right thing to do that. However, I think we could very easily look back in 50 years and last year's NFC Championship was the farthest this group of guys got because it's that hard to win in the league. It is that hard to consistently put yourself in that position. Look at what the Buffalo Bills have said. They got to the AFC Championship with Josh Allen early on, haven't sniffed it since. It's very hard. Your windows close fast in this league because of the parity between, you know, how the reverse order of the draft works, how the salary cap's working, how much more quarterbacks are making, so other guys have to leave. How the league is structured makes the windows much smaller in this league. So I'm not saying it won't happen for Detroit. I think they're as good as any team in the NFL right now. Okay. But it would also not surprise me if last year's NFC Championship is the farthest this group of guys gets because of how tough the division is getting, how hard it is to win the league.
We're talking to former NFL lineman and author Andy Phillips. So you mentioned Brock Purdy, and I mentioned him because ESPN just did a poll with a bunch of NFL executives, scouts, coaches, et cetera, on their top 10 quarterback list heading into 2024. Dak Prescott's on this list. C.J. Stroud's on this list. Jared Goff's on this list. Lamar Jackson's on this list. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Aaron Rodgers is on this list. You know who's not on this list? Brock Purdy. And I find it hard to believe that he's not on this list. And I'm going to throw a little theory out to you, Andy. You can shoot it down if you want. I still think there's a bunch of executives and scouts out there that have a little bit of egg on their face for undervaluing and under assessing Brock Purdy coming into the draft a couple of years ago, and they're just not willing to admit their mistake at this point, and they're going to come up with every cockamamie reason why he shouldn't be a top 10 list. Oh, he's a product of the San Francisco 49ers. Oh, it's Kyle Shanahan's play calling. Oh, it's the teammates that he has around him. When I contend, you can't just put somebody out there and lead the league in passer rating as if that's the easiest thing in the world to do. That's my feeling, that I think there's still a lot of executives out there that are unwilling to give this dude his praise because, conversely, they downgraded him or whatever, just completely whiffed and missed on him in that draft.
I think it's a great theory. I think there is an egos run rampant, especially when your job's on the line. And I think anything that, whether it's the media, whether it's executives in the league, whether it's coaches, anyone that has the ability to try and justify their decision by saying, well, he's just in a great spot. Well, he has this much talent around him. Well, it's really McCaffrey and Debo who make the team roll. Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying, and I think that's a good theory. I think we are missing the boat on the NFL or on the ranking of Brock Purdy and the perception of Brock Purdy. I think just the world is really missing. But when did we stop? When did we stop judging these guys on how they are at the NFL Combine? When did we start just going on what they actually do?
Wow!
Because last I checked, Kurt Warner walked into the NFL after bagging groceries, after not being drafted, coming in, had an all-pro running back, had two future Hall of Fame wide receivers, Katori Holt will eventually get in, had the best offensive coordinator in the game in Mike March, had a Hall of Fame head coach in Dick Vermeil, had a good defense with two good pass rushers and London Fletcher in the middle and a young corner in Dre Bly, and had everything around him, running the show called Greatest Show on Turf. And he won the MVP year one. He won the MVP year two. We did not hold it against Kurt Warner that his running back, Mr. All-Purpose himself, Marshall Faulk, also received first-place MVP votes in the same season. We did not hold it against him that he had weapons, two All-Pro ask wide receivers. We didn't hold against him that he had a future Hall of Fame left tackle such as Trent Williams. We didn't hold against him that he had a Hall of Fame head coach with a genius schemer in Mike Martz as the offense coordinator such as a Kyle Shanahan. We didn't hold any of that against Kurt Warner, who was bagging groceries. We didn't hold against him that he didn't have a first round grade or tear it up the combine. We held none of that against Kurt Warner, who ends up appearing in three Super Bowls, winning one and being a multiple MVP winner. When did we get to the point that we can't judge Brock Purdy in the same manner, a guy who is a seventh-round draft pick, has a running back who's as comparable to Marshall Faulk as I've ever seen, has a left tackle as comparable to Orlando Pace that I've ever seen, has two all-pro caliber wide receivers and a genius play caller? When did we stop holding guys accountable on the field and start holding them accountable by what their metrics and or what their measurements said at the combine? It baffles me. Now, listen, if you don't, if the question is, we're taking everybody in the NFL, putting them in one pool and starting from scratch and having a draft that way, if you're telling me you're not going to take Brock Purdy as a top 10 quarterback, okay, that's your prerogative, and that's fine. But if you're just telling me sitting here today saying, we're the top 10, 12 quarterbacks in football, and Brock Purdy isn't even brought up as an option, I'm telling you, you're watching the game wrong, because this guy led the NFL in passer rating. This guy went to the Super Bowl, and all he does is produce week in and week out. Now, is he fortunate to have guys around him? Sure. But last I checked, isn't Patrick Mahomes playing with the best tight end of the last, 15, 20 years?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Doesn't he have maybe the best offensive coach in the history of the game, not named Bill Walsh? Yes. Isn't, all these guys, Matt Stafford, obviously, we look at him in a whole new light once he got Sean McVay and Cooper Kupp and that offensive line. I just think we're really judging Brock Purdy in a way that we weren't judging guys, 15, 20 years ago. And I don't know why that changed. My guess is social media. But again, at the end of the day, I don't think the Niners really care about that. Brock Purdy sure as hell doesn't either.
No, it's incredible insight from Andy Phillips here on Raider Nation Radio. Make sure you get his book, Round Zero, up at Amazon. Hey, also on this list is Justin Herbert's name, which he also speaks to the fact that how difficult it is to win in the AFC West when you have Mahomes and Herbert on a top 10 list like this. But at the same time, what do you think the influence of what Jim Harbaugh could do for Justin Herbert this year?
Yeah, I think he's going to make Justin Herbert a better quarterback. I'm a massive fan of Jim Harbaugh, always have been, because everywhere he goes, he improves it almost immediately. We talk about systems a lot. Well, the system for Harbaugh is more nice of an identity, okay, and a culture. And they're going to get the toughest guys who buy in and work the hardest in the league and are smart players that don't make mistakes. And maybe it's not the schematics of the Shanahan offense and what McVay does pre-snap, but it does work. And I think he's going to make the game easier for Justin Herbert in the same way that he made the game easier for Andrew Luck at Stanford and made the game easier for J.J. McCarthy at Michigan. And that's okay to make things easier on your quarterback. It's actually kind of nice to do that, because you allow them to figure the game out through the game and not have to just react and repeat every single play. You allow the guy to play chess rather than just trying to go out there each play and, see what we can do. Let's make some magic happen. You allow the game to kind of play out in front of the quarterback. And I think that's going to be great for Justin, because Justin's obviously a really, really smart kid out of Oregon. What was he, a biology major, 4-point student. So he's clearly got the capacity to figure this stuff out. And there was nothing more frustrating than watching the Chargers the last couple of years. They had no flow to the offense. There was no... In my opinion, there was no rhyme or reason for what they were really doing. It always just kind of felt like, and no offense to the guys calling the plays there, but it looked like they were calling plays and not calling games. And I think I've used that to you guys before on the show. There's a huge difference than calling a play and calling a game. Anyone can get out there and call a good play based on, take a look at what's your third and five to third and seven, plays on your play sheet. Yeah, this looks good. But then there's calling a game, where you're calling plays to see this look in this formation. How do they react to this motion and this down and distance? So then I can come back in the end of the third quarter in a similar situation, understand what they did to know that now this play is going to have a higher percentage chance based on what they did before. That's calling a game. And it never felt like the Chargers really did a lot of that. It kind of felt like, let's just call a play and see what happens and see if Justin can save us. And I think I saw Justin regress in terms of his aggressiveness in certain spots, because I think he started to realize, we're not calling the game, we're calling plays. I can't take this shot right now because we're trying to figure out anything we can do to get 4 yards. Where I think they can get back to calling a game, where he's going to have more favorable change with the way Harbaugh wants the game to run, but then he can truly call the game and take some shots. The earlier, when you take shots early in the game, your goal is to get the safeties to start backing off a little bit.
Yes.
Opens up the run game, and the run game in reverse does the same thing. So I just think being able to truly come in there, have the call to change, let the quarterback play the game and not just play the play, I think is going to be the biggest thing. So I think it's going to improve Herbert's quarterbacking skills. It might not improve his numbers, but it might not have to. He doesn't have to have gaudy numbers in Jim Harbaugh's offense, but I think he's going to play the position at a higher level.
Oh, I tell you what, Andy, you always give us some great stuff, and I love that. Calling games versus calling plays, that could be the change in identity that the Chargers have been looking for a long time. Thank you again for coming on today. We absolutely love your book up on Amazon, Round Zero, as well all the great writings you do for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Thank you for making time with us today, Andy. Have a great week.
You guys are the best. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's Andy Phillips here with us, APhil66 on X, and you know, the system is really the identity. He's right. Everywhere Harbaugh goes, they build an identity. And the best thing that to kind of characterize it is that they start putting in an influx of tougher guys, people that are smart enough that they make less mistakes. These were all the things that the Chargers had not had in abundance over the past couple of years. And for what the Staley offense ran last year, there were some times where it's just like, yeah, you – there are some fantastic plays that get you downfield in between the 20s. It's absolutely sparkling and awesome. But are you winning games?
I think Jim Harbaugh is going to be the best thing that ever happened to Justin Herbert.
It might be the right
thing. He's going to have a plan for him. He knows what it looks like. He knows how to win football games. He knows how to build great infrastructure around his quarterback. He knows that you can't just win in this league by putting it all on your quarterback and all on his shoulders. He's not about hero ball or anything like that. He's about putting, you know, building a team around the quarterback and having a plan for the quarterback. He played quarterback. Don't forget that. That's what Jim Harbaugh is. He's a and didn't do badly either. If you go look at his NFL career and college career, he was a pretty decent quarterback. He knows how to win at this level and get good quarterback play, and he's got the best quarterback that he's ever worked with in Justin Herbert. And I think Justin Herbert, years down the line, is going to say thank you for bringing Jim Harbaugh in.
Yeah, I mean, this is finally a guy that you can work with and will work with you. But
he's
going
to know how to help you win football games.
Yeah, he's not the jumped-up coordinator that's going to, you know, that can, you know, communicate with you. All that's been blown up now. So now you've got actually a coach that might be able to push you forward. But what did you think of that comp with the Brock Purdy, that this is what Kurt Warner was? You know, somebody that didn't light up the NFL Combine.
Right.
This is somebody that's coming out and trying to show you.
I don't know that Kurt was even at the Combine, too, you know?
You know what? I don't think he was. So yeah. I think, you know, as your former Iowa barnstormer, you know, and that was the ticket. And next thing you know, his first 2 years in the league, he's an MVP.
You know, it's funny because people say, well, you could get a quarterback anywhere in the draft. And sometimes that's true, you know. But in Brock Purdy's case, it's obvious that people just missed the boat on him. It wasn't, here's this guy that, you know, was laying in the weeds all the time. He had a good career, you know, at Iowa State. He should have been drafted much higher. Whatever it was that the scouts and the coaches were looking for or didn't see in him, that's on them, yeah. Not him. He's you know, stepped in and played marvelous football in a high-stakes situation, too. He used to have this conversation with Jerry West quite a bit. You know, you couldn't – he would laugh at dudes that were averaging 25 on a losing team. He's like, all right, can you do that when the lights are on, when teams are actually invested in playing against you and designing a defense against you and you're you know, in meaningful games? That's what it usually, you know, comes down to and differentiates the good from the great. Yeah, you could do it in that kind of a situation. Can you do it when the stakes are really high? It's not the easiest thing to step into a Super Bowl, you know, or organization, a team that has that realistically has those types of expectations because the roster is really good, and not be the guy that screws it up and is a guy that accentuates it. That's what Brock Purdy does. He's not a product of the system. He's somebody that flourishes and accentuates the situation, and that's what the great quarterbacks do. And I'm with Andy. I think people are just either they're just out of arrogance, out of stubbornness, and not willing to admit their mistake, even by giving him the credit that is due. But there's a reason why, to me, there's people still to this day in this league who refuse to give it up to him, and maybe it's because, you know what, you're the idiot that missed on him.
Yeah, because there are jobs and futures that are kind of like, you know, in the balance when you see somebody like go straight to the top the way Brock Purdy did, and people want to know, all right, well, what was your grade on Purdy? Because, you know, scouting departments, they have a whole list of people. You know, everybody is supposed to be on the same page, and how did we miss on this guy?
Well, go. I mean, I'm not going to name any names because we've all been victim of just bad predictions or whatever. But go look at some of the renowned names out there who are these NFL draft experts, and go look back. Here, perfect example. I just read a story or saw something on Twitter where there was a recruiting site. I don't know which one it was, but it was one of the major ones. Have been accused of cooking the numbers, going back in history and cooking the numbers to show that they didn't completely miss on certain players in their star
ESPN
rankings.
ESPN definitely got roasted for that with McShay and Kuiper.
This was for the college kids.
Yeah, this was back like 2008 to 2012.
I think they brought up DeAndre Hopkins.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, magically, he's turned into this five-star recruit when he wasn't.
Oh, really?
When he wasn't. that wasn't what he was.
He all of a sudden became a very highly touted prospect.
And what was funny is, I don't know what the site is. I'm not going to do that. But what was funny is the story that I was reading was all of a sudden he went from what I think was a three-star recruit to a five-star recruit in the years since.
That's a major difference.
However, his ranking was his positional ranking and overall ranking. They forgot to change those numbers. So it's like, can you be a five-star when you were the 69th ranked wide receiver?
You're 382 on this list.
You know what I'm saying? So like, if you're going to do that, don't take us all for a bunch of dummies. There's somebody that's going to say, wait a minute, first of all, that wasn't the case. Secondly, even retroactively going in there to cover your you-know-what, you still just completely overlook this part of it. Your new numbers don't add up. But look, on that Hard Knocks episode with the New York Giants, you had that scout, or I think it was a scout, somebody in the front office, maybe it wasn't a scout, maybe it was a personnel executive, talking about Christian Wilkins and talking about how he didn't feel like he was a difference-making rusher on third downs. Well, when you looked at Christian Wilkins' stats, he was phenomenal on third down, one of the best in the league on third down. So it's like there's people in organizations right now who, I'm not sitting here saying they're faking it. I'm not sitting here and saying they don't, their positions aren't justified. But they've got some really, they miss the boat a lot. You know, it happens all the time. So this is there is a human element to it.
Yeah.
So when you see somebody blatantly, making an error like that on national TV, can you imagine what this guy feels like now? It makes you question. Not the whole process, but there's not everyone is as good as somebody else. Like I think the world of Les Snead and his group with the Rams, it's been proven they can draft and develop. They know how to do it. There's other teams not so good. And I think the Raiders right now are in a really good position. It kind of goes back to what I think Dave Ziegler built, the scouting staff that he built. I know that
it took an overhaul.
But
it was the right move to do it.
For sure. And it wasn't a complete overhaul. He definitely kept the guys that he felt were really good at their job. So it's partly that too, recognizing what you have when you walk into the building, but also recognizing what you don't have, and you got to make some improvements. And I would say that the new general manager is pretty happy with what he inherited. In fact, I think he's probably a little bit surprised, maybe in a pleasantly, in a pleasant way, that there was a lot of infrastructure, really solid infrastructure around him. And honestly, that can't be ignored. That can't be overplayed. How important scouting and developing and drafting is. It's the lifeblood of the NFL, and it's been proven time and time again.
It starts there, and all the good teams have those foundations to begin with. And for the Raiders, what they were working with prior to that was not where it needed to be.
Right. And you look at the roster now, and we talk about this all the time, Clay. This is a really solid roster. I know there's uncertainty. We all know that. We would be lying if we said otherwise, that there's not uncertainty at quarterback. But that aside, and the hope in that building is that they're going to get good enough quarterback play to maximize what they have and have a successful season. But that position aside, it's hard not to look at this roster and say, man, there's been some really good work that's been done the last few years.
Okay, we'll take a break on the other side. We'll go into some stuff on some of the news and notes around the league with a little four down territory. 702-365-9200 is the number. You can reach us here on both the phones and the text line.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this, the hottest new tequila brand on the Las Vegas market is Dos Catas Tequila. They've been around for about a year. They're just blowing up. They're the official tequila brand of the Las Vegas Aces. The Aces are back in action tomorrow against Chicago. So that's going to be a really big game. But if you're here in Las Vegas, there's plenty of places to go get them. But if you want to just go shop for some Dos Catas tequila, go hit up Lee's Liquor and Total Wine. Both have all the labels of Dos Catas tequila. And if you want a good night out, a nice night out, chill with some friends, or a date in a classy setting, go check out La Casa Cigar and Lounge over at Tivoli Village. You have what they've done over there. Mike Prieto is their great owner, and he and Les Cacahuna have teamed up to pair up some of Mike's great cigars, specialty cigars, with the specific labels of Dos Catas tequila. So you can sip on some great tequila paired up with a great cigar that Mike has come up with. And by the way, Mike's going to always talk about the Raiders. He's a huge Raider fan. So you'll be amongst friends there as well. That's over at La Casa Cigar Lounge over at Tivoli Village. And if you're not in Las Vegas, don't worry. Go to DosCatasSpirits.com. You can make your order wherever you are. It'll get delivered wherever you are at DosCatasSpirits.com.
Season, but it's always a good time to tailgate with Clay and Vinny.
Thanks again to Andy Phillips, and you catch our podcast up online at lvsportsnetwork.com. That's our podcast page. All the shows, all the streaming there. In fact, why don't you do this now? Go up to your either Android, the Google Play Store, or your the Apple Store and get the LV Sports Network app. It streams for both Android and iPhone. Comes in clear, no stutter steps, straight on through on your phone. LV Sports Network. Get the app. It's got all the shows. It'll help you stream, and you can get connected and closer to us here at Raider Nation Radio as the morning tailgate rolls on with a little four down territory.
First down, and it's first and 10, Las Vegas.
Been enjoying, obviously, I'm sure as everyone is, the Netflix docuseries Receiver. It's awesome to watch Davante Adams, and kind of like tell the story of how last year went for both for he and the Raiders. Some great stuff that came out of that, and really applaud the work that everyone's been up on that, and the Peyton Manning executive produced Receiver. This is one to watch. Every story is extremely fascinating. But Davante Adams also kind of continues to make the rounds, which is great because I love it when Davante talks. But he was able to join Keyshawn Johnson on his podcast, All Facts, No Breaks. And Keyshawn asking him and peppering him about what went wrong in Green Bay. And this was Devontae's telling of, like, really, of why that trade got forced and he left Green Bay. And it's a little surprising that the Packers did not take care of Tay. We'll find out why. This is Devontae from Keyshawn's pod.
Last year that I played in Green Bay, I told them boys, I said, hey, you see what I'm doing? Them boys meaning the front office.
Yeah.
It's time for a new deal. So I said, are we going to let me go into this last year with no security? Basically playing, you know, for $12 million, which was significantly less than what a franchise tag would even be. So I'm playing for worse than what the tag is. No security. You got to take out a Lloyd's of London insurance policy to make sure that I'm properly compensated, which still wouldn't have taken care of me the way I needed to. But yeah, just in case, you know, I got hit by a turnip truck when I walked outside, anything could have happened. I needed to make sure that I built some sort of whatever. So long story short, I talked to them. I said, y'all see, it's all pro after all pro. So what do you need to see in order for you to feel like you can pay me right now?
But it was stupid on their part not to take care of you.
Look, I said, pay me right now, and then we don't even need to worry about, I'm not going to consider even that Aaron may be out of here. Let's do it now. Yeah. And if it's up to J Love, if Aaron is out of here, then we're going to rock on. We're going to keep getting it in, right? So I told them that, and they said, okay, well, we'll give you 17 a year. I said, click, nothing to talk about. I don't know if you know what the market looks like or if y'all been asleep for the past 5 years, but there's nothing to talk about.
Keyshawn's podcast, All Facts, No Breaks with Davante Adams. Could you imagine coming off a year where Davante in that last year at Green Bay had 1,500 yards, 11 touchdowns, 123 catches, and there's still, and he's at $12 million on his current contract. Like, don't you think you should probably find a way to take care of him? Even you don't know the uncertainty about what Aaron Rodgers is going to do or what, you know, Jordan Love could become, but make sure you take care of the Ferrari in the building.
Yeah, but there's certain teams that do it a certain way, and the Green Bay Packers are one of those teams. They have no apprehensions. They have no fear a lot of times of saying, you know what? It's not just about next year or the year after. This is a little bit of a long haul, you know, organizational decision, and they just do it a certain way. And not to say that it's right or wrong, although, you know, for the Packers, the proof is in the pudding. They have typically been knocking on the door. I know they don't win every year, but they're one of the teams that you kind of, they're a model franchise. And so, you know, I'm paying the guy without question. If I'm the Green Bay Packers, I'm paying him. But they did have, there were you know, some interesting or extenuating circumstances that were going on. They were at that time still kind of, is Aaron going to be here? Is he not going to be here? Is that going to be something that we got to keep dealing with? You know, when's it going to be Jordan Love's time? Is it going to be better to start kind of fresh with Jordan Love and a fresh group of younger wide receivers that they could all kind of grow together? So there were some decisions that organization made, and I think that I don't know, did it work or didn't it work? I don't know, but I think the Raiders, I'll say this, benefited from those decisions. But it's not like I could sit here and just say Packers, you blew it on that, because they were in the playoffs last year, and they've got some good young wide receivers, and they feel like they're back on track and, you know, on their way. So it's hard to argue that.
Yeah, I wonder how it was questioned, though, because the year he comes to the Raiders, you know, obviously it was a 6-win season, but still Devontae was putting up incredible numbers, led the league in touchdowns scored. I mean, another 1,500-yard receiving year. Made you feel like, you know, did we get that one wrong? Because now we really are going to lose Aaron Rodgers, and where's the direction of this team going?
Yeah, and what you have to do as an organization in those situations is just be all on the same page. I think I've told you this story before, but when the Lakers decided to move on from Shaquille O'Neal, I remember talking to their general manager, Mitch Kupchak. He goes, "We're not idiots. We knew that it was going to be, he'd probably go on and flourish in a great situation in Miami. And we're probably going to stumble for the next couple of years, kind of rebuilding around Kobe. We get it. We understand it. But we were all on the same page." And what that protects against, Clay, is this. As soon as, if there's two people in the organization who are arguing against making that move, as soon as the Miami Heat won a championship and the Lakers were, you know, out of the playoffs for a couple of years, that's when the finger, I told you this would happen. This is exactly what I said was going to happen. And then there's disarray in the organization. But everyone said, we knew that this was going to happen. We knew that they, you know, Shaq was going to go on his journey. And it wasn't even so much about the next couple of years for the Lakers. It was the back end of that contract that they were worried about. He wanted a new max contract. And so that was like one of those seven, eight-year deals. And they're like, what's this going to look? And you remember his contract? How many teams did he change over the last couple of years of his deal? He went from Phoenix to Cleveland to Boston. He kept that contract.
It was strange. Changed. Yeah. Right.
It was because,
like, there were seven different teams towards the end.
And the Lakers were like, that's what we don't want. We know that we're going to take a little bit of a step back. He's probably going to go win a championship, and good for him. But we're all on the same page that this is the right thing to do.
It's Raider Nation Radio, the morning tailgate. Vinny and Clay back on the other side with a story about a former Raider, a Hall of Famer, that scored an ace at Tahoe.
Back to the morning tailgate with Clay and Vinny.
Back here on Raider Nation Radio. Thanks for being with us. 702-365-9200 is the number and text line. Make sure you text the word pool, P-O-O-L, pool, to 702-365-9200 so you can qualify for the 7-day Mexican cruise with stops at Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, Mazatlan, $500 spending cash. It's all for you. But you don't win unless you qualify. It's brought to you by the Summer of Fun from Planet Nissan. So text the word pool to 702-365-9200. Hey, and congratulations to a former Raider who made some history again. And this was this time over at the world famous, and everybody loves it, the American Century Championship over in Tahoe. It's the big celebrity golf tournament that happens this time of the year. And a former Raider was up at the tee box with Marcus Allen and Jerome Bettis, the bus. And Tim Brown finds history again.
Tim Brown, hole in one at 12.
Well, this is the only shot of the day when you make an ace on a difficult par three. Hands down, the best shot of the day.
Strong high fives and hugs from Marcus Allen and Jerome Bettis. And then this was a cool moment, too. But Tim Brown didn't realize it.
Oh, man. Nails it. 143-yard par 3. 12th straight into the cup. And that was in the second round of the AC Championship over in Tahoe. But that's just one of a handful of hole-in-ones for Tim Brown just this year.
Wow.
It is the fifth of his career. But he hit one at Augusta National earlier this year, and he's also hit one on the famous Green Island at TPC Sawgrass. How awesome that must feel for Tim Brown. But, I mean, when you're a Hall of Famer, I mean, it's like, oh, there's just one of many accomplishments that I'm proud of.
Yeah, you know, how'd you do, honey? I just had another hole-in-one.
Oh, yeah, hole-in-one. But yeah, but on the second day, I only had an 85 score. So, it was good and bad.
Channeling his great athletic ability on the golf course, it's hard to do. When we were at that softball game on Saturday between the Aces and, between the Golden Knights and Raiders, my daughter asked me, what do you think the hardest crossover sport, you know, is for these guys, you know? And baseball is certainly hard. That would be difficult to go out there and face 100, you know, or 95, you know, and cutters that that break at your knees and are just look like they're going to hit you, and then all of a sudden they're crossing the strike zone. So I think baseball would be hard. Hockey would be incredibly hard, like for the football players going to hockey, because you got the ice skates to deal with, and not everyone is good on the skates. But golf, you know, and I told her, I go, there's so many, you can, you know, it's just a humbling sport, because the thing about golf is the consistency. We've all hit a great ball. I know I have, and it's like a fantastic feeling. But then the very next shot, I'll hit a tree or, you know, shank it or just miss the ball entirely, you know.
Putt up in the green.
That too, where you're just like, geez, hitting it over, not long, you know, and there's so many different shots in golf, and you have to be proficient at all of them, including what you just said, the greens. That's probably the one that the part of the game that is the key to it all, right? I don't know if it's the key, but you could hit it as far as possible. Well, guys can do that. But the precision of being able to get it into that hole or getting it onto that green where you need it to be on the green. So I think golf would be the great kind of equalizer.
Yeah, it's definitely the equalizer. Like the green is like the red zone. Can you punch it in? How long is it going to take for you to get it into the red zone and score a touchdown?
That's why they have statistics for that.
And it was funny because when Davante Adams came to the Raiders, he was starting to like really appreciate golf a little bit more and playing more with Derek Carr. And when you see this Netflix receiver episode where he's actually at Shadow Creek, which is like one of the best golf courses in the world. It's here in Las Vegas. And it's good that he was able to find time, like, you know, but that's part of his routine to, like, I need to get in, like, a few holes.
Right.
You know, I don't need to play all 18, but I got to have a little bit because this is the biggest challenge for me because I know I'm not great at it.
Yeah, I don't know how it is anymore in baseball, but there was a period of time where, you know, on the road trip, you know, there were golf clubs galore. And, you know, you got to understand that baseball, you got to get to the park around 2 o'clock or so.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if your game's at 7 o'clock, you got to get there at 2. That leaves a lot of time to get up in the morning and go play 18 holes. And I think certain, you know, after a while, some coaches, by the way, you want to hear a quick story? Do we have 1 minute?
All right, let's get on the other side because we only got 90 seconds.
You
got
to hear this one.
All right.
This is good.
We'll get back into the quarterback list and how it pertains to the Raiders in the third hour, as well as more of your thoughts at 702-365-9200.